You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Barb Crabb about the ethics of emergency care. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Crabb is a graduate of the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine and completed an internship in large animal medicine and surgery at Washington State University. While at UC Davis, she did graduate work in biomechanics, studying patterns of locomotion in exercising horses. She spent 30 years as a private practitioner and the owner of Pacific Crest Sport Horse, a three-doctor general equine practice in Oregon, where she had a special interest in performance horse medicine. She is an FEI official veterinarian in dressage and jumping. In early 2023, Dr. Crabb transitioned her practice to two long-term associates in order to pursue her passion for ethics in veterinary medicine. She completed a master's degree in bioethics from the Nice-Wanger Institute of Bioethics at the Stritch School of Medicine of Loyola University in Chicago, where she is on the home stretch of a doctoral program. She currently serves as the chairman of the AVMA's Council on Veterinary Services, where she led the committee responsible for a recent overhaul of the AVMA's Principles of Veterinary Medical Ethics. She's also a member of the AAEP's Ethics and Professional Conduct Committee. Dr. Crabb is a frequent contributor to a wide variety of horse publications, and her articles have won numerous American Horse Publications awards. Her book, Comprehensive Guide to Equine Veterinary Medicine, was published in 2007, and she's currently contracted to write a veterinary bioethics textbook that will introduce basic ethical theory in the first sections and then draw from cases that she's collected from veterinarians in a narrative ethics approach. She's also developed a 10-step template to help veterinarians evaluate and resolve ethical dilemmas. Dr. Crabb is an avid dressage writer and USDF silver medalist. She lives on a farm outside of Portland with her husband, Bob, who's a veterinary internal medicine specialist. They have two daughters who are almost fully launched and currently focus their attention on their four dogs, a cat, and two horses. Welcome, Dr. Crabb. It's so good to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it.
So let's talk about a veterinarian's ethical duty when it comes to emergency care. It seems like society has some pretty unreasonable expectations and even a sense of entitlement that they're owed immediate service whenever they want it or need it. And veterinarians need time to rest, but we also care about the horses, and people feel such a guilt. What about the ethical duty to provide care? And, you know, but doctors need to rest. So how can doctors sort it out in a way that keeps them healthy in body and spirit when they love horses? How can they do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the obviously most difficult questions that we face and problems that we face in equine practice. And it's a huge reason why people don't want to be horse vets anymore, because they don't want to do the emergency. So I think that an important thing to recognize, just to start with, we have to look at it from a profession, from the view of the profession as a whole. So, and I guess to start with, even before we go down that path, we have to realize like what the definition of a profession really is. And what defines a profession is that you have specialized training in a certain area, and basically the profession is allowed to self-regulate, because people within the profession are the only people that have the knowledge. Like, no one can tell us how to do a castration unless they're us, right? So Yeah. As a part of being granted that autonomy to be a profession, we have what's referred to as a contract with society. So our societal contract, what society expects of the veterinary profession, is that we will, you know, our veterinary oath, we will relieve pain and suffering in animals. And part of that is society expects us to provide emergency care. So I think when we get kind of cranky that society expects us to do this, we have to realize that that's actually within their right. That is what our contracts with society would say, is that we're responsible for taking care of horse or animals, any animals in an emergency situation. The problem is that trickles down then to the individual veterinarian. And does that mean that every individual veterinarian has a contract with society, or that there's an expectation that they should take care of every animal in every emergency? No, it really doesn't. And it's not feasible or possible. I mean, it would cause, well, it does cause major,
it does.
Major disruptions. Yeah. So I think, but I think it does help when we think about the fact that people expect us to do that. Well, that's the profession. They expect that of the profession. I mean, we expect that of the human medical profession. We expect right. them, you know, if we have an emergency, we expect that human medicine is going to take care of us. So, you know, that's a thing to consider. And then we get down to the individual veterinarian. And I think that's more what you're asking about, is how does an individual veterinarian then decide when they have to see an emergency versus when they don't have to see an emergency, or when it's their responsibility? So to kind of summarize that, I guess I think there are two things that need to be discussed here. One is a profession-wide, how does the profession meet our contract with society? And two is, how does the individual veterinarian who's a member of that profession then navigate that?
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
I think it's so important to be able to separate those two things. But how does the individual veterinarian decide? That's such a hard thing. So, you know, especially when people, I thought you loved horses. Like, it's so hard. Like, are yes. there things that an individual veterinarian, is there a pep talk they can give themselves? Or like, what would you suggest that people do in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, again, to get in a little bit to the weeds of ethics, there's a theory of ethics called utilitarianism, which is doing, you know, and it's what most people are familiar with, this, that the ethical decision is the thing that provides the most benefit for the largest number, basically. So I think when you look at an individual veterinarian who's burned out, exhausted, frustrated, and is ready to leave the profession, there is a little bit of a utilitarian analysis that can go into that. If you've hit that point, is the long term, is it going to be worse for horses as a whole for you to say no? Or, you know, do you have to say yes? And I think realizing that it doesn't do anybody any good if all the veterinarians leave, all the equine vets stop being equine vets because they're so burned out, that's not the right decision. So to me, putting that little utilitarian lens on the question can help.
That's very helpful. And I think there are people who are actually able to verbalize that now. People that are putting some boundaries on who they will provide emergency service to, and letting people know that in advance, that, you know, that they need to, they're only going to provide veterinary services on an emergency basis to those who are using them for some basic services during the year and are considered current clients.
Regular. So
when they say that ahead of time, like they warn people, you know, like,
right.
I think that can help. And they are verbalizing it. They're saying, you know, I need to be available all the time to a certain number of people. And if I get overtired or I get injured because I am overtired and I'm not able to, you know, maintain my mental or physical health, no one is going to have the benefit of my services. And people are getting to the point where they actually are saying that. So,
yeah, that was such a perfect segue into the next ethical theory,
yeah.
which is so good job, which is a deontological, I always pronounce that wrong, approach. And that's where you have right and wrong. It's the golden rule, or not the golden rule, but the absolute rule thing. I make these rules, I will not break them. So for example, like an ethical decision about getting out of emergency, but signing a health certificate that you didn't see the horse, you can make that be a rule. And you don't ever mm-hmm. have to break that rule. But making the rule that you will never see a horse that isn't a client, you have to, I think, recognize sometimes you have to break that rule. And then that takes us to the third ethical theory, which is virtue ethics. Those are the kind of the big three. And mm-hmm. virtue ethics says that you sort of have to do the compassionate thing, or you know, so sometimes, you know, you've made this utilitarian analysis that you can't see every animal every time. You've made this rule that you won't see non-client emergencies, but then you face that individual situation where you have to break your rule because you just can't not. And that's why I think that every single emergency situation requires people will ask, like, what's our ethical duty? Do we have to go to this? And the answer is always, it depends. You know, because there are a lot of contextual features that come into whatever is going on that you have to consider a little bit in making that decision.
And I find when I talk to people that many people are using virtue ethics. They, you know, they may receive this call, and even though their message says we only provide emergency service to current clients, maybe the person still calls through and they do get they hear a little bit about the emergency. We just moved to the area, but whatever it is, or, you know, this horse is hit by a car on the road, they're going to go because.
Right.
At the end of the day, people become equine veterinarians because they love horses and they have, you know, affection for the other people who love horses, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You're doing such a great job of leading me into the next.
I did. So, I'm not doing it on purpose.
But. I know you're not. It's crazy. But so the next thing that comes into play, I think, with making those decisions is another. There's so many like theories and things that you can use. So there's something called casuistry, which is case-based reasoning in making an ethical decision. And we all do it without putting a name on it. But basically what that involves is you have this situation and you look at what we call paradigm cases. So you look at, let's say we have the horse that got hit by the side of the road. That's an example like that. You look at past situations, and if you get a call that says that this horse, you know, they can see the bone sticking out of the leg, the hit by the side of the road maybe isn't the best example. A colic would be a good example for that, for how you would apply casuistry. So when you're trying to make a decision about whether or not to see a colic when you get an emergency call, we all, if you've been doing this a long enough time, you can listen to things on the phone and you can kind of know whether that's something you really need to go to, or whether based on your past experiences, or whether it's one that you can say, you know, I'm sorry, or you need to haul into a hospital or figure out a different way to that you don't have to go see it. So if you look at your past experiences with a really, really bad colic, you know, with a heart rate of 100 that's thrashing, that's sweating, that, you know, then you know that that one you probably maybe need to break your rule and go see it. But if you get the call that it just is a little off, it's not your client, it, you know, has a heart rate of 30, it pooped an hour ago, then you can base your decision on how those cases are likely to turn out. And that's one of the things I think that where mentorship is so important, because that's where our younger associates have a harder time because they don't have that lexicon of cases that they can draw mm-hmm. from. So phone a friend, you know, have a mentor, call a friend, say, what do you think? Do I need to go see this? Is this the chances this horse is going to be okay? So you can use right. that.
Yeah. So, so you've got that early career veterinarian who is, you know, facing this colic situation or whatever, and they're getting pressure from the owner or whatever. And they, okay, so maybe they reach out to their boss. How can practices sort of help their people navigate these situations when they may not have that, you know, sort of past experience? Do they, you know, use their own experience to give good advice to the associate? Or what if the associate is feeling like, oh my God, you know, it's a colic?
Right. Yeah.
How, what's the best way to help people?
I mean, to some degree, the younger associates probably need to go see those sometimes because that's how they develop their own lexicon of cases. So, right. you know, I think, right. but I think the most important thing for mentoring in a practice is just to be available, mm-hmm. you know, to know that, I mean, a phone call isn't that hard. And if your associate knows that they can reach out to you when they have a problem or a question and they don't quite know how to handle it, that's really what matters.
So when we talk about moral distress, because I'm thinking back to your really good AAEP presentation on moral distress this past year in Denver. And one of the things, there was also that amazing morning for sports medicine, that more 1.5 hours started at 6:30 that morning session.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was my favorite. That was my favorite thing of the whole convention.
See, it
was
narrative ethics.
it was so good. It was so good. And one of the things that struck me about it was the time, some of the narratives that where an early career veterinarian, you know, felt pressure to do a certain thing, whether that pressure was from the trainer, the horse's owner, or worse yet, perhaps from the owner or senior people in the practice where they worked. Any comments on that, on how people can get through that?
Yeah, I mean, there again, it's so important that the practice culture be the right practice for what your personal moral compass is. I mean, we all have a sort of a personal moral where we stand on things. And honestly, the best advice I can give, if you have a situation where you feel like you're being forced by an owner or forced by a trainer to do something that you don't feel is right, once again, you'd love to be able to reach out to your mentor in the practice and have them support you in making the decision not to do that. If you find yourself in that scenario and you call your mentor or the practice owner and they tell you, you have to do that, that might not be the right practice for you. And that's easy to say sometimes and hard to do. And I guess that's another one of my sort of being ethical sometimes comes from a position of privilege, honestly, because if you can't leave your job, if you have a young family, you know, there's a lot of, again, contextual features, the narrative, the whole story that play into that, then it's harder. And you have to make your way. But if you can, I would leave that practice where you're not being supported.
I agree wholeheartedly. And one of the things that can be difficult in a way is sort of sussing that out when someone is doing the the small number of hours that they have with a practice when they're making a decision about where they want to accept a job, it can be a little tough. You know, one of the things I'll suggest to people is that they ask, you know, people that they're riding around with, you know, what are your most important, most highly held values, or and just try to get a sense of what matters to them, the people that are going to hire them or that they're going to be working with or supervised by. How that'll get you a little bit to the ethical, where people are ethically. Any other things that you can think of that would, I mean, you're going to be observing. Would there ever be a place for, and this would be a little forward, but I would love to see somebody do it, is to have a little narrative, a little ethical narrative, and say, so if you were in this position, how would you handle it? What do you think of that idea?
I mean, I think that's amazing if you were bold enough to do it. I can tell you, as a practice owner, I ask those kinds of questions of the associates that I hired. And I will also tell you, the one really bad hire that I ever made didn't answer the question quite right for me. And it was a red flag that I sadly had ignored a little bit because it was too far down the process. And but honestly, another thing I think can be incredibly useful, call the people that used to work there, if you can. Call the former associates and ask them about the, you know, just the ethical culture, the culture of the practice. I think that could be a very helpful thing.
Just to put a little idea in your head, maybe that this whole assessing the ethical culture of a, maybe that would be a nice AAEP talk.
There you go. Well, you know, I think I told you earlier, my brain goes so much faster than my everything about my, I'm constantly coming up with all of these ideas of things that I want to do. But honestly, some of the bigger practice do, but having a practice code of ethics, like, does the practice have a code of ethics? Do they have mission, vision, value statements? And what do those look like? And then how would they handle certain situations is clearly would be a big one.
I love that idea. We'll see if anybody's bold enough to do that. And why not? I mean, there are a lot of open positions, and I think people should be being really cautious about where they, you know, spend their early years, because people can end up in leaving something they love, equine veterinary medicine, because of having bad experiences. So,
I mean, the reality is if you're interviewing with a practice and you ask those kinds of questions, if you're in a practice where ethics is a strong, like doing the right thing is a strong part of their culture, they're not going to be upset by you asking those questions. If you're in a practice where they don't, you know, so that right there might give you some answers.
Good point.
So go for it. I say go for it.
I love that idea. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just mentioning, if anyone's looking for some entertainment, I recently started a podcast with my daughter, who is a horse professional. It's more entertaining than this. It's kind of, not that this isn't entertaining, but it's a little mother-daughter vibe. There's a lot of humor. But we also are trying to weave in a lot of kind of ethical things about the horse industry in general, at welfare questions, things like that. So it's Echo Equestrian Media on Apple Music and on Spotify. I'd love it. Have a listen.
That sounds kind of fun. I'll have to give it a listen myself the next time I take a drive.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. We have a lot of people who are listening to it are just cracking up.
That's great. Yeah. That is great. Well, thank you, Dr. Krapp, for joining us today. It's been really fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all who have been listening to the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thank you to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, be bold, embrace change.